this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 391, the show where the Marvel Noise guys and Phil talk about the indie books we've been reading. I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, and what we have for you this episode is another lost conversation, this time from mid-September, with Kevin and Phil joining Andrew, the LA Rabbit, and I, who are fresh off seeing each other at the 2016 Baltimore Comic Con, which has quickly become my favorite show these days. So the deal with a few of these recent lost episodes is simply conversations get recorded to be shows and then sit on the editing block because Marvel Noise, our sister show, has a regular biweekly schedule that we endeavor to keep. And plus, I've been dealing with some limitations from a benign, non-life-threatening vestibular brain tumor that makes it hard to keep up. We'll try splitting up the editing duties between us and to do better in the upcoming year. But in the meantime, here's Kevin, Phil, Andrew, and I. Andrew and I just got back from the Baltimore Comic Con, and for a full rundown on that, the whole show experience and description of the show itself, listen to Marvel Noise episode 278 that's out now. But I did want to bring up a couple of the indie creators whose paths we crossed and a couple of books that we picked up there, because overall it was an awesome show, wasn't it, Andrew?
I completely agree. In fact, I have a bunch of books that were in, that are going to be my, I mean, I have some other stuff, but yeah, my contributions are largely going to be BCC. Is that what they call Baltimore Comic Con? But my BCC collection.
Your Bleeding Cool collection?
What have you guys been reading up there north of the border?
Well, only Canadian, only comics by Canadians.
Well, there has been some more Canadian comics coming out from Chapter House.
I've been reading a few Canadian comics, too.
Like, yeah, Northgard? I pre-ordered one yesterday. It was that, remember they did that anthology? Good Lord. True Patriot. They're putting out, like, I guess it's a bi-monthly series. So I made sure to pre-order up the first issue.
Well, I've been reading a lot of Action Lab lately, as you guys know. And so over the coming episodes, I'll be reviewing some of the stuff I really like. So today I thought I would go through kind of some of the ones I've read that maybe aren't really so much worth talking about. or just not necessarily that I didn't like them, but just ones I'm not going to cover anyway. Like, I'm not, I just didn't, like, they're not my favorites, I guess, in a way. But so I'll just go through them quickly. But so one of them was Ghoul Scouts, which was a 4-issue miniseries. And it's basically a kid comic where it's like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. They're kind of like a Scooby-Doo troop, and they have to fight off these zombies. And basically, they're using, like, sticks to hit them. No gore at all. All you hear are whack sounds. This was a big disappointment to me. Not because it was a kiddish comic, but basically, they would talk for a page or two, and then there'd be two pages and no dialogue of just them. Like, it looked like it was always the same action, almost, of them just whacking zombies. Kind of didn't really go anywhere. There's a second miniseries coming out where it's going to be them against werewolves, but I would definitely give that a pass. Full Moon put out a new one by Tim Seeley based on Peter David's old movies, Oblivion. I don't know if you guys ever saw those.
No.
There was two of them. If you haven't seen them, the comic will probably lose you, but if you have seen them, it's definitely, well, it's Tim Seeley, so it's in really good hands. It's definitely worth picking up. Another one was Hero Cats Midnight. I've never read Hero Cats. Doesn't really interest me, but just on a whim, I picked up number one of Midnight, which is kind of the Batman character of the cats.
Okay.
And the art was good. The story's pretty good. I'm just not a big cat person. Like, this is probably more Kevin's type of thing.
What? Samurai Pizza Cats?
I used to love that show, Samurai Pizza Cats.
So if it was about a small dog, Phil, you'd be all over it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely have a lot of dog-type comics. So, yeah, then there was Princeless, Raven the Pirate Princess. I jumped in on issue 6, and I kind of kept going. Andrew told me that there's actually a whole bunch of different miniseries and stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was their first... just
the first thing, but...
No, that was their first big, really big breakout hit. In fact, I think the first one garnered an Eisner nomination, so it's been going for a few years. And mm-hmm. they do that model where they just do them as, like, 6 issues or 4 or 8 or whatever, and then do a new one, which I think is pretty smart for a smaller company.
Yeah, and it's really good. I actually really liked it. I won't really talk about it because I kind of jumped in late, so I'm a little confused at the moment, but at the same time, I'm enjoying the characters. I mean, this one's a kind of a pirate story, so mixed with some fantasy. And then the next one is another Full Moon property they did called Trancers by Gray and Palmonti. So also in good hands. The movies, I rewatched all 5 or 6, and after like the first one or two, like they're pretty bad. Like they get pretty bad as they go along. But the comic I thought was better than any of the movies, and it continued, I think, after number 2 maybe.
One thing I got to say about you, Phil, is you never give up. Whether it's a comic or a movie series, you'll just slog through 5 or 6 sequels like it's nothing.
Well, Power Master, I did like 12, and I didn't like one of them. Yeah, I've got a problem for sure. And then there was one trade I picked up called The Final Plague, which I always hate when zombie comics, they boast, like the writer or whoever will boast how they're doing something new with the zombie genre, and it's something we've never seen before. And then you read it, and it's all the same shit. Like, all the zombie stories have been done. You can't really come up with anything new. So this was a big fail on that. Plus, it was never continued, so you never got the whole story or anything. But the artist does a great job with some of the horror pictures. Otherwise, the drawings are horrible. But, like, whenever there's something horrific going on, it looks really beautiful, though. And then the last one is their big crossover, Actionverse, which has, like, Molly Danger, Stray, Virtue. It was complete garbage. It basically, it was a one-shot with all the different heroes teaming up against the bad guy, and it was completely boring. I enjoyed the parts of the bad guy alone, but I'm not a fan of Molly Danger. I think you like that one a bit, Steve, though, eh?
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
Yeah, this is just a one-shot, so it probably was not a good, like, way to introduce me to the character. But, yeah, I just thought the comic was, overall, this big event was just kind of boring. But, yeah,
The Molly Danger art is really good, I gotta say.
Yes, yeah, and it's a great writer, Jamal Eagle, right?
Yeah.
And I really like his stuff usually, so... But yeah, the one shot, maybe it's just because I was kind of thrown into it without much knowledge, you know, from what happened before. So I think that's why I couldn't get into some of these characters, because it's all characters with books that I'll never pick up from Action Lab. Like, they're kind of the ones I'll stay away from, because none of them really interest me that much. Like, they have 2 characters based on, like, a dog and a cat in here or something, or 2 dogs, I forget, but it's kind of dumb. They're just boring characters. But yeah, that's it for those ones.
What if Neil Adams was wrong? What if it wasn't the Earth that was hollow, but it was the moon? What if on the moon there was discovered all of these enormous spires scattered all across the surface of the moon, and they weren't there at the time of the Apollo missions?
I can't get over your premise that Neil Adams is wrong, Steve. So.
Well, we'd have to investigate, right? See what the deal is. If the moon was discovered to be hollow and of alien origin, like a sphere, a shield meant to hide a wormhole inside, a wormhole that seems controllable in some way. I found a indie digital comic was brought to my attention that explores just that premise. But all of that is just in the text on the first page. And the comic is about the explorers from Earth who fire off in a vessel, much like at the beginning of the space age, and shoot through this wormhole and try to see what's on the other side.
That sounds like up my alley for sure.
This is from Insane Comics. You can find it on insanecomics.com or at drivethroughcomics.com. And it's They Came from Planet Earth. One issue's been out already. It came out in July of 2016. $1.99 right now on drivethroughcomics. Written by Dave Scatchy with art by Gary Welsh. And it is black and white art, like digital with gray tones, similar to like some of the early Power Principle stuff like that Alan was doing with his gray tones and stuff. And a really nice like digital painted cover by Daniel Kovacs. It's 24 pages plus the text page. And it's an interesting story. I mean, it gets deep into characterization right away. You've got a group of explorers crash landing. They are not equipped with any super-duper space-age equipment or anything. They literally are just shooting themselves out there to chart the territory. And they crash land, and they're all beat up and strewn about, and one of them was sent flying and lands in a completely different area, a crash site. And they encounter these, like, humanoid insect-like creatures and can't communicate with them. And Mathis, one of them, man, they tell Mathis to keep his cool, but he freaks and pulls a piece of sharp shrapnel out and starts swinging it at the insect creatures, which, of course, everything goes bad then. It's like that was considered hostile, and then the spears come out and the stabby-stabbies start happening, and the rest of the story ends up being about the character who was landed far away from the crash site and how she manages to kind of make her way from point A to point B and rendezvous to where the other characters are. Very intriguing, very straightforward storytelling, and the art is more than adequate as far as telling the story. I found myself being able to hang out in that world and really have a sense of what was going on sequentially. Good stuff. They came from planet Earth.
Did you get the feeling that the aliens put that barrier over the black hole to protect that universe from ours, or us from them, kind of thing? Did they do that for a danger? They didn't go into that at all?
We're not getting any sort of insight into what's happening from the other side of things. It's all from the dumb human going out there and exploring. And we get a shot back, you know, at Mission Control, where they just, like, lose the signal and they're like, oh, man. So it's really from the Earth perspective, from the human perspective, similar to, like, a good Conan tale or a good underwater mystery type story. Mm-hmm. It's humans in uncharted territory, and they're you got to start describing this world and reacting to the really alien threats that are all around them. It's pretty cool. Worth checking out.
Yeah, it sounds good.
InsaneComics.com.
That fired my brain for a couple seconds.
What did it come up with?
For some reason, it came up with Interstellar, the movie, and Divinity for some reason. I don't know. My brain just, you know, sometimes it's just like, hey, what about this connection?
Just anything in space?
Well, not anything. I wasn't like 2001 or Star Trek or anything. I don't know. Sometimes your brain just goes off in different directions.
Well, put that brain to work and tell us something you've been reading, Kevin.
All right. Apparently, I've been reading a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff.
Oh, I'm so sad I missed this one.
you're at risk of losing your citizenship. So if you don't read Jeff Lemire comics.
Well, I really wanted, but I missed the first issue when it came out.
I was, because he's doing good work on Bloodshot right now. And
so?
I went to finish off Sweet Tooth from Vertigo.
And Moon Knight over at Marvel.
That's right.
What? Marvel.
He's all over the place.
We were given that props on Marvel Noise 278 along with the Boston Comic Con stuff. Or Baltimore Comic Con.
Well, this
stuff.
Is Indie Noise. No Marvel Talk.
Yeah, well, we don't want to mention that stuff, Steve.
We can refer to the other show. Thank you very much.
not till I get issue 5 of Civil War. What the hell?
I just figured Kevin forgot.
Refer to the more popular show. You know, those Marvel comics always keeping the indie guys down. Jeez.
Now who's talking about Marvel? Ooh, hashtag talking about Marvel. All right, come on now.
I'm talking about Vertigo. Not old Vertigo, but... You know, Sweet Tooth was the series about the Antler Boy, and he was sort of, like, secluded, and then there was some kind of...
He had a hard-on for chocolate bars.
And wore flannel.
And there was, like, some kind of weird sickness that was taking over all the humans, and not him, since he was, like, some weird deer hybrid person.
Or something.
Post-apocalyptic type of thing, but I fell off about... Maybe about halfway through.
Yeah, I haven't read the last half, but the first half I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed the first half more than the second half. Because I remember, like, just falling off, and then, like, there was a digital sale. So I was like, oh, I'll just buy the rest for $1. And then it just sat there for, like, I don't know.
I have, I got them all signed by Lemire, and he drew pictures in each volume for me. It was really neat.
Huh. Like, I started back with, like, the Kint flashback story. That was probably the one I enjoyed the most. Like, I enjoyed it, but I don't know. Something about it, I just wasn't really thrilled by it. Like, I was looking at it. I still have, like, I bought the first 5 issues. Then I bought 3 trades. So I think I'm just going to sell off, like, the other 3 trades, because I'm like, I don't see myself like ever rereading it. Like, it sounds like I'm really negative about it, but I don't know, something about it, I don't know, it's hard to explain.
I think I fell off too with you, Phil. Like, I remember reading the first few trades, but I don't know if I ever finished it.
Yeah,
I have them in my to read pile, but I feel like I'll never get to them at this point.
Yeah.
Have you read any Jeff Lemire comics that you've liked recently?
Yes! That's why I thought I would bring up his new series rather than, you know, just be like, hey, I enjoyed that, but I'm not... but I never need to read it again. Like, that's not the best recommendation. But I think I fell off on the boat with Lemire for a while. And I was more a Kint guy, but... you know, the reason Lemire stuff is really doing it for me. So, I saw the first 2 issues of the Dark Horse series that was, it was delayed for, I don't know, what was it, 6 months or a year, and then they resolicited it again. And then it has Dean Ormstrom on art and Dave Stewart. But this is Black Hammer, all about superheroes and all that. I didn't originally, like, pre-order the series. I was obviously thinking, like, oh, that sounds like a neat concept for a book, but I'm like, thought it might be, like Essex County, or I'm trying to think of what crazy reasoning I was. It's like, even though it was superheroes, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to go into that. But, you know, while I was in Toronto for Fan Expo, like, I see the first 2 issues, I'm like, I might as well pick these up. I got the Lemire covers, too.
Nice.
So this is a lot of, like, meta commentary on superhero stuff here. Because it's a bunch of superheroes that have been possibly transported, like, from their own world. If they're not on their own world. Like, it's not entirely clear, but, like, some kind of cosmic crisis went on, like, you know, like... Secret Wars or whatever, and then, like, they disappeared from their world. So they've been in this other place for, like, 10 years. Yeah, and they're, trying to get around
And it's a small town that they're trapped in, like a rural, small America-type town, a Smallville-type place, and they're trying to just fit in. They can't leave the town. But yet, it seems like other people can, so they're not sure what the heck the mechanics are. Like, they're trying to, like, send mechanical probes out to see if they can chart what's outside, and they lose touch with the probe every time it goes outside, like, the little town lines. So, like, they're trying to get, like, jobs, they're trying to be accepted by the community and not reveal themselves as former superheroes. They don't know if they're jailed by an intelligent creature, they don't know if they've been transported to another reality, but yet they keep referring to this event that the one hero who isn't there, the one of them, the Black Hammer, gave his life so that they could be in the position that they're in and at least be alive. And there's going to be more revealed about that, I'm sure, because there's something more there. And all the heroes are really derivative, too. It's great. It's Abraham Slam, I like him, and Colonel Weird and his robot sidekick, Talkie Walkie, who is the perfectly visually designed robot. That's like my favorite kind of robot. It's like a little bit, you know, Robbie the Robot. It's a little bit like brain floating in the jar type design, and it's a little bit like Bender from Futurama. You know, there's Barb Alien.
I love the artwork too and everything. For the characters,
the storytelling's great. The sequentials are awesome. The Barb Alien is like derivative of Martian Manhunter.
I like how they say one of them is the Warlord of Mars, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty on the nose.
Yep. And Golden Gale, who is like a Shazam, but her magic word is Zafram. And instead of being a kid who turns into a superpowered adult, she's an adult who turns into a superpowered kid. And now she's stuck as a kid. And to keep up appearances, she's supposedly supposed to like go to school and stuff, but she's in her 50s and she's like smoking and swearing and getting in trouble and, you know, picking away at their... trying to, you know, their privacy because she's calling a lot of attention to them and their family. It's a great book. I'm really digging it so far, and I'm going to be sticking around to see what as it's revealed.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I should be, like, adding this and reading this monthly because I'm sure it would read well as a trade, but I find, like, if you've got a really good mystery, like, the journey is part of the thing, and it doesn't really work the same way when you're reading a trade.
How they pace out what they're revealing is definitely seems like part of the experience of the story.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Lost. And like when they all were on that island, they're like, okay, are we on another world? Well, we're going to try this out with this phone and everything. And like there's forces against them. And they're like, well, what can we do? What can't we do? What are these mysterious forces on this island? And it totally seemed like one of those type of things. And all the other, like, crazy, like, flashback to the Golden Age stuff, and then you see some of the other kookiness going on. Like, I don't know why exactly. They say they can't reveal themselves to the public that they're heroes, but I'm like, I don't know.
Or what happens.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're like, well, why can't you? Like, what would happen to the, like, would the people freak out? Or would, like, someone that put them there, you know, like, make themselves known or something horrible would happen to them? Like, is that what happened before? Like, that's what they have to stay hidden?
It's got to be tied into whatever the heck happened to Black Hammer, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming so.
Somehow they have to keep low. I don't know. It's strange.
They're all dead.
And Colonel Weird is really weird. I mean, he's been away to some other dimension. He's like an Adam Strange type. And he, like, went to the other place for a little too long, and he came back a little brain damaged. And he's like floats around like this creepy zombie dude saying weird stuff. He's really weird.
But if he can go to other places, it seems like he could help them out somehow if he wasn't... Like, he seems really damaged.
Does he really go where he says he goes, though? I don't
know. That's the thing.
We'll find out, hopefully.
But the best
is it a mini or ongoing?
Ongoing.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I assume it's ongoing. Like, it seems like the end of the second issue, they get somewhere with something. I'm not going to reveal what it is. But I'm like, oh, already? Like, it seems to be moving. But it also seems like it could go on for, like, 60 issues or something. Like, depending upon what other complications or other things happen,
like how well it does.
Technically, I guess they could go, like, they don't necessarily have to, like, stay on this world, or maybe they just get to another city or another, like, whatever this is. But Barb Alien, like, that's got to be the best name of the bunch.
He's a barbarian. There's your barb.
But he's an alien.
Crazy. And your boy your boy Matt Kent did a pinup in the second issue, a barbarian I'm gonna keep doing it. Barbalian autopsy.
I know. It's all good.
Well, he needs something to do because it's stuck over at Valiant.
Stuck. Yeah, the Golden Gale spotlight in the second issue was pretty awesome. How they were, you know, they're becoming a teenager, and they're like, oh, I'm turning back into a kid when I become superpowered. This isn't cool. And then they get older, and then they're like, yeah, I'm turning back into a kid.
But now she's stuck as a kid, and it sucks.
I know.
She misses having tits.
This is true. But if they've been stuck here for 10 years, if she's 9, do the people not notice that she's gone to school in the same grade for 10 years? Or... like, so many questions about things that are going on.
Well, it's because they're not real, probably.
Maybe. I don't know. It kind of reminds me of, like, the JSA, when they were sort of sent off to another realm to relive their lives. Never ending.
Andrew, fill us in on what the kids are reading out on the West Coast. What are they reading on the beach, on the boardwalk?
I don't know. I was going to talk about something I got in Baltimore.
Oh,
I don't know what the kids are reading.
I can relate to Baltimore.
We went by the Valiant booth and I picked up a Dark Horse comic.
How does that work?
Wait a second. You went by the Valiant booth and you got a Dark Horse comic?
Yes, I did. It turns out Fred Van Lente was tabling at the Valiant. And he had his new series, Weird Detective. So I picked up the double size number one issue, The Stars Are Wrong.
I've also bought this, but I haven't read it. But when I saw that, I'm like, this has Andrew's name all over it.
It does. Art by Gui Villanova, G-U-I-U. Gui? I don't know. Colors, Marcia Wallace and Hosan Gonzalez. So it's sort of a mashup. Kind of like a reverse take on having some fun with Lovecraft. Because what I really enjoyed is it opens with one of the famous quotes, but he turns it on its head and does the opposite. And then the character goes to explain why he thinks this the inopposite thing from a Lovecraft story. But it's this detective who has all these extra senses, these 17 different senses. And as we always say, I'm going to spoil some stuff. So I don't know if you want to plug your ears or not, Kevin. But it turns out he was a regular detective up until a few months ago. And then what happens is another take from a famous Lovecraft story is the detective is not a human. He switched consciousness with this sort of weird pyramidal creature from this other dimension. That's, I don't remember the name of the story, but it's a pretty funny one. I mean, not intentionally funny, but just one of those funny old Lovecraft stories. So he's here to stop this mysterious bad things happening, but because he's an alien, he doesn't fit in that well with regular society. So it makes it a little bit tricky for him to pick up our idioms, like he watches his TV to try and learn things. But sort of similar to the Archer Armstrong, he has these extra senses, not just taste, touch, and he explains them. So it's kind of funny, you know, kind of like how you have the little caption boxes with the different kung fu things from the Archer and Armstrong. This is where he talks about how he uses these other senses to, like, see through walls and to, like, read people's minds. He has a cat, and they communicate telepathically with a Mocha Din is the sense of reading the mind through the eye. So it's all this fun science fiction thing, but there's a mystery running in the background of who's killing these people, but they're killing them in kind of a weird supernatural way where they suck out all their insides and leave them as just kind of empty corpses. The first issue is double, so it runs along that way. One of the running gags is to explain away his difficulty relating. Everyone, he claims he's from Canada, so that's the bit about, you know, whenever they're like, he seems weird. He's like, oh, I'm from Canada.
That is weird.
But, yeah, so if you like kind of Lovecrafty beasties, but sort of taken in a more modern sense, I would totally recommend this. The art team does a great job. At first, stylistically, I wasn't grooving on it. I mean, the storytelling is excellent. I don't know what my big problem was, but about halfway through, I just kind of, I don't know, I was totally sold over. He does a lot of great expressions.
Well, you just need to get into the story sometimes a bit, and then the art grows on you.
Yeah, yeah, that was it for sure. Because it's not that there's any problem. It's just, you know, some styles you respond to more than others. But about halfway through, I was totally into it. Because where he's watching the TV, the guy does a really great job with light. Or girl, I don't know the gender of G-U-I-U. So, yeah, yeah. But if you like strange, weird, mysterious things with a little bit of a humorous twist, I can unreservedly recommend Weird Detective. I think the other, there's got to be like two or three issues out by now that I'm going to have to run down when I find an operating comic store, or maybe a Long Beach this weekend.
Now, while you were at the Valiant booth, did you buy a Valiant comic?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did?
I bought Generation Zero, number one, also.
Oh, yeah.
Signed by Fred, and that's Francis Portello, Andrew Dollhouse. I am not up on my Valiant, so for me, these were all new characters introduced to.
Should I inform you, Andrew, on who these characters are?
Yeah, who are they?
They do a nice thing on the opening page. But yeah, give us the Thunderbolts lineup style.
Is this the Young Heroes?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, these are the kids that Bloodshot rescued early on and went into Harbinger Wars.
I hate those characters.
Really?
Yeah, I vaguely remember.
Cartoon girl with that makes like the cartoon animals. Ugh.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's because the comic is like, I won't say the artwork's real serious, but the artwork is a certain way, and then all of a sudden you inject like some cartoon character into it because that's what their powers are.
I know you're a fan of Bloodsquirt. We heard it.
No, I don't think you're a fan of anything that like.
I love Archer and Armstrong.
Changes. Yeah, but they don't have any like they don't vary the art style for like one element in the comic. Like, that's shown up a few times, and Phil, you're always like, ah, I don't like that element. I don't like that thing they're doing there.
I remember, I read that issue where he rescues them, but I don't remember the kids that well. I think it was, I must have read just the ones about Bloodshot when he's rebelling against the company.
They had, like, a mini and, like, some crossovers, stuff like that. They pop up now and then.
I think I missed those. Yeah. Those are
They showed up in, during, I think it was Armor Hunters, they showed up as well. Mexico got messed up, so they were there sort of helping people out, and, but I know some of them have, like, went different ways or escaped or whatever, so it's not, like, all the same lineup, but pretty much. And then they introduce, like, I guess it's someone new that's joining the team, or helping them out or whatever for the first issue at least.
Well, the log line is they're sort of like a teenage A-team. So you can try and contact them, and if they respond, they'll come and help you with your problem. So the new character is one that has this problem, the mystery of the town, and she contacts them and they actually respond. And so I don't know that she's going to necessarily join the team or if she's just the conduit for this first arc anyways, but I enjoy it. Had some overcome. I'm not super big on teenager books, but I found myself falling into it quick enough with the because there's enough of a balance of other elements. And it's also kind of interesting, like, I'm curious about this town and what's going on and what the mystery is behind it. And if it's going to be a real mystery or turns out... I mean, you would think with the involvement of these heroes that they would think there's something there, too, and they show up. So there's got to be something. But it's a good mystery of, like, what's going on in this futuristic town and these characters. But I don't know anything about the Valiant world. Really. I mean, I read some Valiant comics, but you guys can all talk for, like...
A lot different now, I think, though.
Yeah, you guys can just talk for hours about code words and all this stuff, and it sounds like Argle Bargle.
No, I think this is a new town, but it used to be, like, a town down on their luck, and all of a sudden they became, like, this technology nexus. So you're kind of like, well, why is this town, like, so popular and so booming now? So some weird stuff is definitely going on. And who are those strange characters that talk weirdly by the end of the issue? Like, what's up with that?
Well, they got to be something to do with, like, all the weird pollution that's coming out of the one side of it, too. It's a basically, it's like this perfect technological town. But this girl's boyfriend thinks that there's something up. And then when he goes to investigate, he disappears and has shown up to be a drunk driver. And she's like, he's a straight-edge kid. He doesn't drink. And so she's mysterious, and then a package he sent her before he died shows up and leads her to investigate. And that's when those weird creatures, weird little robot creatures show, or I don't know, I thought they were kind of robot-looking, but maybe they're just weird organics that are kind of smooth, so they look robotic.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. But I like how this is mashing a bunch of elements, like, I remember reading, like, Runaways and stuff like that, and there's, like, an element of that here.
Runaways is so overrated. So shut it.
And then they spend a lot of time, like, building up the main character, so, like, that was... Because we our title characters don't show up, like, basically until the end, so spend a lot of time getting to know everyone.
Well, also hooking you into this weird mystery
about,
like, what's going on with this town. Because if you don't really care about the town, you know, it's going to be 5 issues of you not paying attention.
I just wonder if that's kind of risky that you don't have the main characters show up. But I was totally invested in what was going on, so I wasn't really so concerned. Like, hey, one of those cool, well-known Generation Zero kids going to show up. Because I don't know them that well, but I wanted to see them show back up somewhere in the Valiant universe again.
Yeah, but don't you Valiant guys just buy everything regardless of the quality or content?
I jumped off a long time ago.
What? Why would I buy Internal Warrior?
I don't know. You guys bought... Phil bought like 400 trades.
Yeah, I overdosed on it, and then I can't read it anymore.
I bought...
Except for Archer and Armstrong.
I bought 2 issues of... Exo Manowar 49, because at Fan Expo, I guess it was the same thing at Baltimore where they would take your comic out of the wrapper that came with the card inside, and they would stamp it like 1 millionth Valiant, or is it Exo? Maybe it's 1 million Exo copies sold, something like that. It was a stamp anyways, and it like sort of embosses your comic. So I was like, oh, I'll go for that.
Who doesn't want their comic to be embossed? It's a boss.
Valiant wasn't the only publisher to have a booth there at Baltimore Comic Con, though, Andrew. Ominous Press did, too. No, Ominous Press. Ominous Press was a startup indie comics company that was started up at just the wrong time. Like less than a year before the crash of comics in the mid-90s. And so they were a quick casualty as one of the smaller startup publishers. But the band got back together last year at Baltimore Comic Con, in fact. And this year they had a booth and their creators there, and they were able to display what their new properties are and their new books that they're going to be publishing. 3 of them that are coming up, and there was a world premiere like preview book. And Ominous Press is Bart Sears, Ron Mars, Andy Smith, Tom Rainey doing art on one of the books, and Sean Husvar, who's the publisher and the CEO of the company. And what they've got is a connected world. The art is pretty intense, as you would think, from Andy Smith and Rainey and Bart Sears. One of them is Giant Killers, where there's kind of ties into this backstory that connects the whole universe, where there's this kind of like this giant barbaric type hero type character who is on Earth and in New York, and he's drunk and despondent, but his job is to find and protect this female savior. You're right there? All right.
The Geomancer?
No, I'm just trying to find out what's going on. It sounds like someone was falling down a flight of stairs and it just never stopped.
I think that was Phil. All
right. Yeah, so I had, thought I had mute. I had to tape my mic. It broke.
Gotcha. So this drunken despondent former big hero has to find this chosen one for a quest, because she's, the prophecy is for her to defeat the big bad of this universe that's being put out there. That book is called Giant Killers, written and drawn by Bart Sears. The second book is Prometheus, written by Ron Mars with art by Tom Rainey, and that has these again godlike barbaric hero type characters just engaged in all this crazy action, and it turns out that it's like a Matrix type thing where these beings are actually in stasis, and it's all
that name's already being used though.
Prometheus,
yeah,
in the movies, I guess.
I thought it was
that a lawsuit. Oh, I don't know.
And then the third book is called Demigod, and that's written by Ron Mars with art by Andy Smith. And that has an 18-year-old slacker type who gets like a Shazam-type deal going on, where he's suddenly transformed into this giant, strong superhero type, and decides to go by the name Hercules, and he's living it up and yucking it up, but he's going to call attention to himself from some big bads and have to deal with that. It looks like a pretty good launch. Alan New Mutant, check those books out while we were in Baltimore. And Mike Myers over at the DC Comic Book Noise podcast, DC Noise, was checking them DC? Out and saying they were pretty good. So,
well, what about Gotham by Geeks?
It's not just me.
Are you guys fans of Bart Sears?
Yes.
What about you guys?
I
don't like
it. I think it was at CrossGen. But I remember there was a rough Captain America and the Falcon series that Christopher Priest wrote that I wasn't really digging on the art front.
Yeah, he's an acquired taste, I think.
What's he done that wasn't in the 90s or early 2000s?
I feel like it's been a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of this stuff from Ominous Press is stuff that he's had and been working on in the back of his head since he was like a teenager, some of these concepts and stories, and he's a lot of the creative force behind the concepts that they're going to be putting out in these books.
Cool. Will these be going to press, or are they digital?
Yeah.
Or
yep, they'll be going to press. Announcements to come.
I read something recently. Do you guys know 451 Media? You guys ever read anything by them?
Don't think so.
I think they're somewhat new. I don't know, though, for sure.
I don't know. Hard when it's a bunch of numbers like that.
Yeah.
You know, because there are a bunch of publishers like that.
This one's called Self-Storage. I don't know if you guys ever watched those shows like Storage Wars or anything.
Nope.
I know.
But this is... you know the concept anyway. Like, right. They bid, and then they get a storage unit. They don't know what's inside. And basically, this one, Self-Storage, by Clay McLeod Chapman and Matt Timson. It's a black-and-white comic. Beautiful art by Matt. And basically, yeah, it's just a story about this guy. He bids on one of the lockers. They have no clue what's inside. The owner kind of goes away, so he opens it by himself, and it ends up being just a woman in there. like in the dark, a naked woman. And she turns out to be a zombie.
Uh-oh. Close the door.
Yeah. She kind of jumps at him. He closes the door, kind of freaked out kind of thing. And while he's gone, kind of freaked out, it ends up killing the owner of the storage unit. And so he's kind of stuck with this problem with a zombie. I don't know why he wouldn't just call, like, the police or something. But basically him and his two friends, it kind of, like, people who go to get their storage units and stuff, they start getting killed by, like zombies end up getting loose. More people turn to zombies. Like, just chaos kind of ensues. And basically his two friends kind of want to start a business where people can go in, shoot zombies, whatever, you know. Kind of like an attraction. And the other guy just is kind of falls in love with this zombie girl and wants to figure out her past and stuff and what happened to her. And it's a 6-issue series, and by the end, pretty much almost everyone dies. And he even gets killed by the girl, like the main character. And so at the... Like, if they would end it around there, it would have been kind of good, but they kind of kept going. And they had this whole other ending where it's his friend kind of doing the attraction, and then all this other stuff happens, and all the zombies get loose. Like, I just found, like, they kind of dragged it on a bit too much. But otherwise, it was a pretty solid book. And there are other books that they advertise and stuff look all right, too. Like, there's one called Sunflower I really want to get, which I don't know what it's about, really, but it's about, it looks like it's, like, this girl stuck in this hick town kind of thing. But it looks like they all have good art and stuff. They have these stupid cards in the back where, you know, you scan your phone and it supposedly enhances the experience. But usually that stuff's bullshit, from what I learned from Marvel. But yeah, it was a pretty cool company. I'll probably check out some of their other stuff. I don't know how long they'll be around, but it's high quality, though.
I had the worst time with that augmented reality crap from Marvel. Yeah, I would spend way too long, and then you finally get it to work, and it's like some 30-second interview with somebody, and you're like,
that was on YouTube anyway. Yeah. Dumb.
Are you still trying that out, Andrew, years later?
Oh, I quit at some point. Okay. I think one time I finally got it, and it wasn't even an interview with, like, the creator of team. It was, like, some, you know, like, the Marvel intern who was working on some degree in something, and you're like, what the expletive deleted is this?
Do they even still do that?
The Gold Balls song is still the best.
I don't think they do it anymore, because I haven't noticed it reading any.
Kevin. You're up.
I am.
Would you like to step to the front of the class,
please?
I was
double up with Generation Zero.
Uh-oh.
Should I throw another Fred Van Lente Valiant Punk on the fire?
You don't have to, but if you want to. Otherwise, I'll take your stream.
I think you know this guy from Conan, Steve, the Thomas... Giorello.
Ooh. I perked right up.
So, some of these guys, when I was at the Valiant panel, they were talking about some of these guys, like, take a really long time. So, apparently, I think he was working on this War Mother book for, I think they said, like, a year or something. I was just like, I don't know how you make a living, like, doing, like, one Conan book or one Valiant book or whatever, but it's really, really pretty. So this series is in the aftermath of something that happened in the 4001 AD Valiant event book in the future.
And what's it called? What's it called?
War Mother?
4001 AD? War Mother?
War Mother.
War Mother. That seems strange?
Yes.
A little bit.
But basically, there's a giant space station in space.
Well, if it was space station in the ocean, it would be an ocean station.
That transforms into a dragon.
Oh, I've heard
you
right
got that? But it's trying to stay in space, so it's been, like, losing sections, and they're just, like, thrown to the Earth. So whenever some of these things come down... Like, someone goes out there and, like, scavenges the pieces. So you have this one group of people that where the War Mother lives that needs like certain elements of the ship so these people can survive in isolation. Like, I don't know, it's weird. It might be, like, there's these different types of people living together, and it's never entirely sure. Like, I'm sure there'll be some future story with this character. Yeah, that was a good pun, right? Future story, we're in the future. Anyhow, like, there might be, like, Vine pod people living with regular people. It's just really weird. Because when More Mother goes out to hunt for these things the community needs, they have, like, this sentient sniper rifle.
I don't know, Kevin. I think your segment might be dragon.
you're too confused by the awesome.
And Giorello draws the whole thing?
Yeah!
I'm going to have to buy a Valiant book. Shit.
Finally, we got you.
No, you got him, not me. Don't loop me in there.
But, Steve, what's even better is I got these promo art cards, like full-size, like, art promo pages in full color from the shop.
Cool.
So I'm, like, one of the big Valiant fans there, so they're like, oh, yeah, maybe I shouldn't open this package. I thought they were all the same, so I could give one out to, like, one per person. But they're all from different pages. So they're, like, on cardboard, you know, heavy stock and everything. So now I got four of those pages.
Nice.
Like, original art things I can display on the wall.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to expect a review from you, Steve, on that.
Yeah, you just heard all about it. War Mother.
It's a sentient sniper rifle. You know?
But what about all your friends that were going to get artwork pieces? What are you going to do for them?
Yeah. Do you mean us?
It's a space station in space.
Yeah, I've never heard of that concept. That's pretty neat.
It's pretty awesome. Some of that's from like the original Valiant stuff in Rye. But it's pretty crazy. They're using this sniper rifle that it like talks and... It's like, why am I doing this? Why am I killing people? Like, that type of craziness. And then, like, after every usage, apparently you wipe, like, you would brain wipe, like, wipe out their entire memory, and then you bring them out again when you need them, and then they go through the whole process again. So I'm just like, that is nutso. Like, this whole title is pretty much nutso. But I really want to see them show up in, like, another book later on.
So this was written by the kid that wrote Axe Cop?
Hmm. No, Fred Van Lunthe, right?
Sounds like.
No, from the same weird detective Generation Zero kid. I don't think you can call him a kid anymore, though.
Sure you can. He's a youngster.
Give us another book, Andrew.
All right. Well, I also had the chance to meet, I guess, an acquaintance of some of the East Coast crew, but I had never met him, cartoonist Luke Foster, a.k.a. Burbank. So I went and picked up some of his books, and I thought I'd talk about the one-shot, well, currently a one-shot, possibly more to come, Dr. Banana's Monkey Magician. And Luke is a one-man band, except cover colors, but he does the writing, illustrating, and color work, and Dr. Banana's Monkey Magician is about how you would expect it to be. The cover on the quote from Rafer Roberts of Archer and Armstrong fame, a fun madcap and slapstick romp in the vein of old Bugs and Daffy shorts. Dr. Banana's would be right at home in a Chuck Jones cartoon. And the story is Dr. Banana shows up looking for his monkey's paw, which is the fabled monkey's paw we're all familiar with, where the, you know, you make three wishes, but they turn out ironically bad for you. And a witch has it, and he's trying to get it back. She's trying to flog it at a flea market where they're selling comics and antiques and everything. And the trick she does to get him is she makes a monkey's paw wish about him, which, of course, turns out bad. They sound good, but obviously all those turn out bad. And so he has to use his spells to conquer it back and filled with, you know, some pop culture references for the humor, but not a lot. Mostly just kind of the situation of, you know, this little monkey, Dr. Bananas, using his magic and trying to get one up. And at the end, he does get his paw back through a clever twist. But I won't turn it away. But it's got a real kind of like, you know, not overly sort of the modern style of not like these cartoon shows kind of where it's real, like flat colors and not a super detailed backgrounds and things like that. I think he does a lot of his work online to fit you in. But, yeah, if you like kind of wacky one-shots, check out Dr. Bananas Monkey Magician by Luke Foster. And sadly, Luke does not have a goofy publishing name. That is really surprising. I thought if anybody would have some funny company. But I don't know. Seems like everybody knew him. Alan and Steve and even some other people I know when I mentioned him knew him. I was like, man, Luke's famous.
On Saturday night at the con, Luke and I rode the elevator up to the rooftop bar area with Jim Starlin and had an excellent conversation with him about having a battle. Every time we're on that elevator, we kept thinking of the Captain America scene with having the fight on one of those, you know, elevators that are glass and are exposed to the exterior of the building. And we had this whole conversation with Jim and then get off the elevator and go have a drink. And I was saying to Luke, oh, that was pretty cool getting to talk to Starlin. And Luke's like, that was Jim Starlin? He was like, that was Jim Starlin? That was, like, he said, must have said it four times. Then he went over and bought Jim a drink and said, I didn't know that. And then he got all fanboyish. It was pretty cool.
Luke is super personable. He wears Hawaiian shirts and he's a skinny young man. So, but somehow he knows everybody. Yeah. He's lives in Charlotte by way of Connecticut for some strange reason. But yeah, check out Luke. Yeah, he knew all the, because he had mentioned he stayed with Mike and Barb when he did his road trip, so he knew them. He's a man about town.
What's with all the Hawaiian shirt people?
I don't know. I blame George Perez.
I could be. Because they do tell a good George Perez story in Canada when they have their Hawaiian shirt, too. These Hawaiian shirt people are everywhere.
When Andrew and I were walking the Artist Alley in Baltimore, I saw a familiar face and stopped by to say hello to Fabrice Sapolsky. He's the fellow who wrote the One Hit Wonder miniseries that I dug. We reviewed it, it must have been last year or when it first had come out, about a hitman who lets himself pretty much go public and using... It was all celebrity and Hollywood type stuff all tied to it. It was a riot, almost quite literally. But Fabrice passed along to me a zero issue, digest sized, but printed on this wonderful heavy paper that, like, where the blacks are like a little shiny, even though it's a matte paper. I love that kind of printing. It's like every page is better than cover stock from the big two, you know? And the book is called Intertwined, and it's going to be coming out from Dynamite. And it's written by Fabrice Sapolsky and drawn by Fred Pham Chong. And Sapolsky does an awesome job immediately pulling me into this story. You just start out with a concept that's pretty easy to grasp, a night vigilante helping a woman in trouble, breaking up a fight in Chinatown in 1971. It's a period piece. I think 1971 Chinatown, the beginning of all the exploitation, kung fu movies and all that sort of stuff. Well, that vibe is here quite a bit. This guy's like a ninja daredevil type. And the artwork is really nice, really kinetic. The coloring is done really cool. What's dark looks good being dark. It doesn't look like it's trying to hide inadequacies in artwork or anything like that. And when the more manga-like kinetic distortions are used for action, it's used really sparingly and with good execution, I think. So you've got this vigilante type that's really cool, who's called the Spirit of the Earth, and he's got like this wooden armor almost that's really organic looking and pretty cool. And he goes on his second stop of the night after breaking up the one crime happening, and goes into what turns out to be an ambush, into this like drug ring headquarters or this big drug deal going down, and meets the big bad drug lord and has this big battle where he's just fighting hordes and hordes of thugs and henchmen. And ultimately, the bad guy wins. The Spirit of the Earth is killed and dismembered. And the person who is going to be the protagonist of the story, a young man in Chinatown, we only meet at the very end of the story when he is one of many who witness in the center of Chinatown a giant block of ice that was delivered off a truck, and in it is the dismembered body of the Spirit of the Earth. And that's how the issue ends. That's the kickoff of the series. I mean, this was, as a one-shot, this was such a satisfying read and so full of action and comic-y goodness, but, I mean, it's really intriguing, and if the quality of the production is going to be at this level, I'm going to be buying another Dynamite book. Intertwined.
And it won't be that you got suckered in by a nice-looking cover.
Well, the sketch cover on one side, but the other side does have a really cool cover. It's got, like, this dragon, almost like a shield crest type thing with all the different characters on it. And the character designs are really good, like I said. And this is going to be cool to check out. It's all mature audiences. There's all cursing and a lot of blood and guts. Cool book. You guys will definitely dig it. Intertwined.
Yeah, I don't think Phil likes mature comics anymore.
No, I like mine.
He likes those all ages, remember? He was reviewing all the all ages books.
Someone has to. You guys in your potty mouths?
Well, I got an all ages book if no one else wants to jump my last one of the day, unless someone's going to jump in for me.
Shoot.
Well, I have a library read. That's why I'm always pushing to get this one out, and it's thanks to Kenny Kyle, who I've reviewed some of his work before he was tweeting about something, and it made me to go to the library and get this out. And it was a super popular. This comic spanned almost 30 movies. Think about that. 28 movies, I think. I tried to watch some of them, and they're pretty unwatchable. But
it's no excuse.
So we're not talking about James Bond, then?
No. It's Blondie. Blondie and Dagwood, the cartoon strip people.
That had 28 movies?
Yeah, can you believe what? So wow. He was, I don't follow pop culture at all or music or anything. So he was tweeting about something came out. It's called Blonde or Blondie or something or other. And he was tweeting about it. He's a funny guy. And I was like, boy, that reminds me of Blondie. And I'm like, you know what? I don't really know that much about Blondie except I, you know, read it in the paper. So I got this book out, like, it was a family thing. This is by The Sun. It came out in 1980-something or other. It's Blondie and Dagwood's America. Dean Young, that's The Sun, and Rick Marshall. And it's got an introduction by Bob Hope. And it talks about the whole history of Blondie and how it came. And in, like, the 40s, it was the most, like, 1940 was the most popular comic strip. That's how these movies came out, starting late 30s, went through the 40s and then the 50s. It had a TV show, a radio show. Like, this thing was huge, huge in a way. I mean, Bob Hope's writing your introduction. It's clearly something that has more resonance than I ever knew in my life. And also the legacy of that, I mean, started in, you know, the 30s, and the character really had changed. She started out as a flapper, and it was from her point of view, and she was dating all these guys, and Dagwood was just one of the suitors. And they decided to change it at some point, and he was, and Dagwood was the son of this millionaire guy. The Bumstead Millions, but they decided to get rid of the money end of it and just make them like a regular couple. And so it was fun. And then, like, the son ends up inheriting it. And so there's all the scripts in it, but there's also kind of that back money. It made it interesting. It's just weird to think about how, like, not only is it still going today, but just how influential at one point the script must have been. And that's the part that's kind of shocking. And also, I love seeing the old art. And as you guys probably know, the Raymonds worked on it. Alex Raymond. You know Alex Raymond, right, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Nope.
And then his Alex Raymond was a famous old-timey cartoon strip guy.
Flash Gordon.
And in the old... Yeah.
Okay, he did that? Okay.
And in the old days, what you would do is you'd kind of be an apprentice or an assistant for these guys. At cons I've heard. Even as recent as Howard Chaykin talked about doing that. He was an assistant to, like, Gil Kane and some other people.
Oh, yeah.
But this system goes way, way back. So Alex Raymond started out.
If you weren't just apprenticing, I mean, it became such that not only did Alex Raymond end up having plenty of his own apprentices, but he also had a whole field of artists that were just trying to mimic him.
Well, I mean, you can. It's that kind of classic lush. What I think of is like the early 19th century or 1900s, 20th century artwork. But the other thing I like is, so they're talking about all these, like I said, it's from the Flapper, and there were this whole string of, like, different, like, he did this one in the beginning called Dumb Dora and everything, and they're basically just all these kind of bimbo ladies. And just the fun was them in, like, little Flapper dresses running around, and then he totally flips the script and turns it into a family affair. And so, and they just worked on it for years and years and years, and then he hands it down to his son. And I think that's kind of interesting to think, like, that's the family business. Like, instead of whatever it is, I don't know, you know, owning the local car dealership or whatever, your dad's, like, the most famous cartoonist in the world. And you're right about he really runs it all, because when they introduced Alexander, he used to be called Baby Dumpling, the kid, but the young family had a miscarriage, or not a miscarriage, sorry, but the kid died really young. Maybe it was a miscarriage, or maybe the kid was really young or miscarriage. So he couldn't look at the script at all, but they were able to give it to the assistant, who was able to run, because the formula had been run so well. So, and they just go through this string, but you stay on it for years and years and years, like that's your career, you know, you're the guy that helps draw the art. And so you can watch the transformation. But the other thing I really enjoyed was how he's like, we keep it simple. We talk about, like, eating, money, sleep, and family. And that way it has a universal appeal. They made a pointed comment not to ever address holidays or anything, at least in the old days. The son may have changed that subsequently, because he said it got so popular around the world, it gets translated, and they didn't want to have a Thanksgiving a bunch of scripts and people in Japan trying to figure out, you know, what the heck's this Thanksgiving business? So I find it fascinating when there's that kind of calculated sort of planning. I heard Jim Davis was like that too. Like, you think it's kind of this whimsical thing, but you realize there's a lot of thought that goes into how they build their world and kind of the rules they set up for these characters or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that Steve and I were still not in the heyday, but we still had some sense of when cartoon strips carry weight. You know, like Bloom County and Garfield and all that stuff were still major sellers. But I think strips must have been replaced by, like, web cartoons or something now. I don't know if the oatmeal is as popular as Blondie was back then, but it does seem kind of crazy that there was this whole... Because they talk about there were, like, 32 pages of comic strips in this one newspaper on the Sunday.
I used to pour through those Sunday funnies when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Any opportunity to read anything comic-y. But, Andrew, it was Jim Raymond, Alex Raymond's brother, who was the assistant on Blondie.
All right. Yeah, right. But Alex started there. Oh, yeah, he left. But Jim was the one that spent, like, 60 years on it. But, yeah, I mean, no one's heard of Jim Raymond except unless you're a Blondie fan. But that's why I dropped Alex. But it is fat. The thing I always liked about it was how crazy proportion Blondie is. Like, she has that, like, ridiculous zero waist, and, like, but she's got all the curves and everything. It always made me laugh. Like, you would be you know, physically unable to have that body type. But yeah, the movie.
That's what I love about comics, though.
But yeah, so it was really fun reading kind of the best of, in a sense, and it gave me more appreciation because it was never a script I was particularly drawn to. But it was a little history lesson for me about that Blondie and Dagwood were super 28 movies worth of popular, and I would have never pegged that. So check out this book if it's in your library or any of this stuff. Maybe you guys will get more of an appreciation. And besides, it's kind of, when you get the reprints of the older stuff, it's so much bigger. It's kind of nice because they put a ton of detail. That's one thing I do like about that strip. And it's tough to read because the papers are, we still get the paper now, but it's so shrunk down. But in this form, you can really see all the detail they put in all the panels. Man, I went on for a long time about Blondie.
That's all right.
It's good. Passionate.
You guys got any other ones or want me to, I got one more to do.
Well, I'll just do a quick mention. I started reading, I know you read this, Steve, that's why I started again, The Spawn with Eric Larson.
Yeah.
Writing it, and I find it's a really good companion piece for Savage Dragon in a way.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a fan of that comic, like, there's no reason why you shouldn't like this almost now.
Absolutely.
And basically, yes, Spawn lost his powers to an extent anyway. I just jumped on with 263.
Okay.
And I've read 64 and 65, and it looks like he's putting together a team, which includes Ant, which is an old character done by like Asylum Press and Image and an indie character, and Savage Dragon's good. There's a crossover with him coming up next, and but yeah, I guess he's going to try and put together a team to fight crime because he's a little more of a superhero now, sort of. And also, do not read Spawn Kills Everyone. That is fucking garbage. That's
noted.
All I'll say.
Noted.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
because he doesn't kill everyone. He goes to a comic convention and kills people in costumes, and yeah, it's just not funny. And
the McFarlane,
it wasn't drawn by him.
Yeah,
no.
The McFarlane Larson collaboration ain't gonna last forever. So enjoy it while it lasts. It's gonna make for a few good trades.
What do you mean? Well, is he gonna leave soon? Did he say? Or?
Yeah, he'll be on to something else.
Okay,
back to Savage Dragon full time, I'm sure.
Yeah, which is okay, because Savage Dragon has not been coming out as fast as this.
Right. Well, it's got a story to collaborate on, and when that's done, I guess it'll be done.
Yeah.
I got one last book from Baltimore Comic Con to share with you guys that was given to me by the fellow who I was also familiar to me, who was sitting right next to Fabrice Sapolsky, and that was Raymond Gill. And he had a one-shot kind of a preview anthology for his line of comics that I read on Comixology last year called Sci-Fi's, and that's his company. You can check them out at sci-fi's.com, or you can check them out through Comixology. And it was a science fiction anthology, well written, but this time Raymond passed along to me three issues of another Sci-Fi's series called The Men from DARPA, and it's written by Gill with art by C. Raymond.
I looked this up. It's on taptastic.com, or at least two episodes there.
All right. The deal with the Men from DARPA is they are awkward and nerdy and into pop culture stuff and make a lot of Star Trek references, and the dialogue is pretty funny, and the sort of in-between conversations and arguments that they're having when they, you know, cut to the first scene with whatever they're sort of doing, that kind of thing. They're awesome in the lab, great with their scientific ingenuity, but they should never be out in the field, let alone being involved in espionage. But they keep getting dragged into such adventures. So it's the story of guys who should be in the lab and who are very familiar with pop culture and all the different type of adventure stories and things that we've read in various media, stuck ineptly going out on various espionage missions and needing to survive and using their scientific wiles to get them out of the jams they get into. It's pretty good. The first issue, they're kind of forced into this world because one of the guys' girlfriend ends up being, you know, a spy, and she steals some artifact that's important to them, and they have to figure out a way to get it back. The series, though, really hits its stride in the second issue, where they need to go and rescue another scientist who has developed this coal fusion reactor that everyone, including the bad guys, think is going to be turned into this big bomb, but the guy keeps saying it's not going to make much of an explosion. He keeps kind of saying that all along, and that ends up being part of the punchline. But the story is so funny. I mean, they get into all these situations, like they are teamed up with a CIA agent because this is a real serious mission, trying to get this captured or missing, kidnapped scientist. And the CIA agent gets shot multiple times, but he's got a vest on, but the shock of being shot a bunch of times stops his heart, so they have to like resuscitate him. But this happens multiple times to the guy, so there's all these kinds of running gags and stuff that are funny. They all dress up in SWAT gear, and one of the scientist guys, one of the men from DARPA, is a black guy. And they're out in the alleyway about to make their assault on the location that they arrive at, but a spider crawls on the black guy's, like, under his armor, and he's freaking out, and he's ripping off his armor, and all the other guys who are still in their armor are, like, all, like, surrounding him and, like, trying to, like, help him out and get his stuff off and get the spider off him. And just then, like, a big gang of street thugs show up, and they see, like, a bunch of white guys in armor, you know, oppressing the black man on the ground, and and the language they use is so funny, and they're like yelling things like "Sharpton this," and the scene even splits to like a silhouette shot of like them, you know, running off like as if they're, you know, like Scooby and Shaggy running off from you know, some specter of some kind, running from the gang. And then later they end up using that gang to their advantage to like help them out fighting the other thugs. It's really cleverly done. The third issue, though, even gets better, where the CIA agent, who's I won't even reveal his name because it's all tied to the punchline of this one that I can't give away because it's too good. The CIA agent, his dad was one of the Secret Service agents who failed to protect President Kennedy when he was shot on that fateful day. So this guy uses a time travel device that he discovers from the scientist guys that he's now friends with after helping them out on the last mission. And he tries to go back in time to stop Oswald from killing Kennedy so that his dad doesn't live with all of this guilt of not having done his job correctly and it broke his dad and all this stuff. And he has to go back and change history. But what does that do? And you think you've read every type of one of these stories? You think you've read every type of Kennedy conspiracy story? This is genius. Genius. This is really, really good. And Raymond Gill even says in the beginning that he's had this story kicking around for a long time and never had a vehicle to be able to tell the story. And it works perfectly here. And you realize that it was all set up when the CIA agent was first introduced in the previous issue. And it's really good. The Men from DARPA, from Sci-Fi's. It's digest-sized. Really fits in your hand nice.
I like digest.
And it's also really nice print quality, where, again, it's like better than cover stock every page. Good stuff. All right, I think that does it for another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise.
We were awesome, right?
You were, particularly. As soon as we got talking about Valiant. As soon as Andrew mentioned the Valiant booth, boy, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Phil. Hey, Andrew, you I got another comic from the Valiant booth, right? And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go.
Well, I just wanted to make sure he wasn't rude and only picked up a Dark Horse book while I was there.
All right.
Hey, I'm there to buy comics, man. I don't discriminate.
We'll be back sometime soon when we've got another round of indie books to share with you guys. In the meantime, you can catch us over on Marvel Noise. You can like our Facebook page, Indie Comic Book Noise. Tell us what indie books you're reading. Tell us if you like the ones we talked about. And our Twitter handle is at Indie Comic Book N. Thanks, everybody.
Later.
sweet talking words of rain or snow. While you through chattering teeth reply and curse us as you go. Why not spare a thoughtless day for those who have no flame to warm their bones at Christmas time? Say Jack Frost and the Hooded Crow. Now as the last broad oak leaf falls, we beg, consider this. There's some who have no kindness save for turkey, wine, or gifts. And no children's laughter around the fire, no family left to know. So lend a warm and a helping hand. Say Jack Frost and the Hooded Crow. And ivy clings, your fate is none too clear. The Lord may find you wanting, let your good fortune disappear. All homely comforts blown away, and all that's left to show is to share your joy at Christmas time with Jack Frost and the Hooded Crow. December nights, we talk in words of rain or snow. While you, through chattering teeth, reply and curse us as you go. Why not spare a thoughtless day for those who have no flame to warm their bones at Christmas time? Say Jack Frost and the Hooded Crow.